Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
On ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's a Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope everybody's having a good Tuesday afternoon. Lots of fun stuff to go over today here on the Extravaganza. And it is I, Jim Cushlin, hanging out with you. Chris Mitchell's also hanging out with me today. Bob off for the day today. He'll be back in the big chair, of course, coming up tomorrow. And then that big chair for him will shift to Highland Meadows, of course, coming up on Thursday, Friday, out at Highland Meadows. Mike Miller, of course, drive time all week. We're getting ready for the Marathon Classic. And then yours truly, I'll be out there all weekend giving you a leaderboard updates. Well, until a champion is crowned on Sunday. And I really mean that, because I remember a couple years ago, they had a three-hole playoff on the Sunday. And so I was hanging around for basically an extra hour. So when I say I'm going to give you the updates on the weekend until a champion is crowned, I absolutely mean it. So that'll be, of course, fun as we continue along. I'm sure Mike's got some fun guests later on today for drive time because, of course, as I mentioned, he is up there at Highland Meadows all week long. But we got a lot of fun stuff to go over. We're going to have open phones here in hour number one at 866-240-1065. Got some fun little topics going to go over today. You know, you got your continuing trade rumors that are out there. We're hearing kind of an interesting one only because names are being possibly thrown out there. And, you know, in this season of trade rumors in baseball, the hardest thing to peg is basically – you know, the hardest thing to peg is essentially what prospects are going to be brought back because, well, as we all know, there's a reason those players are called prospects and things like that. So we're going to dive into some of that because obviously, as I've been mentioning for quite a while now, at least in terms of the Detroit Tigers and trade rumors, well, that's a continuing story until we eventually get there or the deadline passes, which we're under 2 weeks. The deadline is Monday, July 31st, about 4 o'clock. So that's 2 weeks from yesterday. So we're under the two-week mark until the baseball trading deadline. So we got some rumors and things to go over with that. Some other random baseball-type topics to go to, you know, as well that I dip our toes into. What's going on with Ezekiel Elliott, the former Buckeye, current Dallas Cowboy, and his, issues? That's one way of putting it, I suppose. Is that going to affect him on the field in any way? Is he going to get suspended? We don't know. Who knows on that? God, it's a very interesting topic I'm also going to go over the course of this hour. And it started because I was listening to other things earlier today, just, you know, flipping around for some things. And one show I stumbled across, I don't know what their main topic, but at that moment they were kind of talking about, you know, because contracts are ridiculous. Actually, I remember the part where I chimed in on was they were laughing at the fact that because it was Cleveland-based, they were laughing at the fact that Kelly Olynyk and Deion Waiters together are now making $100 million and how just utterly ridiculous that is. And of course, folks, that is ridiculous. They'll be both making that. That's not individually. That's their contracts put together. But really, Kelly Olynyk and Deion Waiters put together are worth $100 million? Yeah, no, nobody actually believes that. But the conversation at that point kind of got sidetracked, and I started looking up, and I think I found a couple fascinating articles that they were referring to, which is, you know, and we kind of talked about this recently in terms of, and I know Bob's brought this up in recent weeks as well, you got these athletes making so very much to the point of utter ridiculousness, but just saying, well, I'm never going to the ballpark or the arena or the stadium again. Yeah, it's 2017. That strategy won't work. It's not 1995 anymore, where you could just say, "Well, I'm not gonna go to the ball game anymore." Let's see how they like that. You know, you could play pretty much any of the major sports, you could probably play in front of empty stadiums and arenas and everyone will still make their money because gate receipts don't carry the weight they once upon a time did. It's about the TV deals. And we've heard us go over this in different contexts and other shows, not just this one, national related, local related, with this subject's brought up. We're not unfamiliar with this concept. But we are also in a changing media landscape. People are cutting the cords. I know I've been personally thinking about it, but I haven't quite figured out how to watch that random Cavs game, regular season game in January, or that random Indians July regular season game. I haven't figured out how to do that exactly without entering something about my current cable provider or whatever. But that's kind of changing. I know Major League Baseball in the last year and a half or 2 years has been trying to dip their toe into streaming some of their games, maybe a different fee attached to something like that. But as we keep going forward, the landscape is going to, basically the thesis here is the landscape of media and streaming and all those things put together is going to mean when we get to the next round of TV deals, whether you're talking Major League Baseball or NFL or even college football or NBA, whatever, when those next round of TV deals come, if the online way of doing things keeps advancing, those TV deals aren't going to be worth anything near to where they're what they're worth now. Because, of course, as I mentioned, the streaming seems to come with people cutting the cords. You just heard me say, I want to. I really do. And I'll be frank and completely honest with you. The thing that's stopping me is, as I said, I haven't figured out how to watch that random January Cavs game or random July Indians game. And, you know, this works for anybody. Insert team here. You know, you're a Tigers fan. We're talking random July Tigers game or a random Red Wings or Pistons January game. Once that gets figured out, you're going to see more people cutting cords because then there'll be people like me who on some levels have only been holding out this whole time because the way to stream a game that's not, say, ESPN, you know, because they have the Watch ESPN app and some of the other major networks have ways to do that. I know I watched a whole bunch of tournament games on my phone this past March. Now, go ahead and keep refreshing that. So I watched tournaments. So on a national level, this is starting to take effect, but it hasn't fully filtered down to every locality yet. But it will as time goes on. And when that does happen, when you get to when these current TV deals expire, which, you know, depending on what sport and what league you're talking about, you're somewhere in the ballpark of 2019 to about 2025. Somewhere in that neighborhood, depending on what sport you're talking about, is when the current TV deals will end and they'll have to be renegotiated. Well, if all these things put together keep going in that direction, then almost by sheer economical physics, I guess, they won't be worth as much. The TV networks won't shell out as much money. Their viewership is declining. In fact, got an article right here. This is from the Sports Business Journal, Sports Business Daily. This is from yesterday, showing that 29 or 18 of the 29 U.S.-based markets, they're excluding the Toronto Blue Jays and Toronto, Ontario. But of the other 29 teams, all of which, of course, are in some U.S. city, yeah, 18 of those 29 have seen their ratings fall. And that's been a theme the last couple years. I know we brought it up here on this program. We haven't complained about it this year because we haven't had to, despite the quirky fact that they're still 27th in attendance. But it looks a lot better because the average is actually over 20,000. That's why we haven't had the why aren't the Indians fans going to Progressive Field conversation this year. Well, because even though they're still at the bottom of average attendance, that average attendance is actually above 20,000 this year, which visually feels like, okay, there's more people at the ballpark. So we haven't had to have that conversation. But when we have the last couple of years on this very program, you've probably heard me say something to the effect, at least when having that Indians discussion on attendance, because this hasn't been a problem necessarily in Detroit at Comerica Park. I've always thrown out the obligatory fact that, okay, they may not be showing at the ballpark, but Sports Time Ohio, which carries the Indians, their ratings keep going up. In fact, looking at them, they're up 29% our Indians ratings on Sports Time Ohio relative to this time last year. That's the third best increase in all of baseball. Only the Yankees and Braves have increased their TV viewing, TV ratings, I should say, more than the Indians for this season. And the Indians have one of the best overall ratings at a 7.52. Only the Royals at 7.69 or better for an overall rating. And this was measured, you know, relative for right now versus 1 year ago today. But 18 of the 29 markets are all down. Even the Tigers. Tigers are actually way down, folks. On Fox Sports Detroit this year, the average rating for the Tigers is 5.42. That is down 22% from a year ago. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is, this is starting to affect the TV ratings, which had been doing nothing but going up for pretty much everybody these last couple of years, even as attendance may have plateaued or gone down, depending on your market. Well, if those trends keep continuing, then if I'm, okay, I'll use the parent company. If I'm ESPN, when it comes time to renegotiate, say, my Major League Baseball deal, am I going to want to spend $4 billion or whatever? I'm just throwing numbers out there. When next time, 2020-something, might only be worth it for maybe two instead of four or whatever the number is now. Either way, the point is, these will probably decrease. The TV networks will probably offer less next time around. And you know what that's going to mean? Less money in owners' and players' pockets. So much so that some are already speculating that once new TV deals in the next decade kick in because of the changing landscape, you'll start to notice that players are actually being paid less than they are right now because the revenue won't be there. And the younger a person is, the less likely they are to view on the old school TV. They want to get it on their phone or their iPad. And this is part of that changing landscape. So I'm going to go over this a little more in depth, give you some more numbers, you know, as we go along. Again, the main theme being ratings are going to go down, which means next round of TV deal negotiations between networks and sports leagues, they're going to be for less money, which means less revenue for owners and then therefore players. And that could change a lot of things, especially if online streaming of games really takes off to a point where you can cut your cord and then still flip on your phone and watch the Tigers or the Indians or who or insert team here. So we're going to go over that. It's kind of a fascinating little subject. We'll continue the baseball theme here for a couple minutes. Tigers were a nice winner yesterday. And by the way, I didn't get to mention this yesterday, but if you're an Indians fan, you're actually rooting for the Tigers really until the week leading up to trade deadline, late next week, because the Tigers started a four-game series at Kansas City, then it's three at Minnesota, and then it's back to Comerica Park for three against Kansas City. In other words, 10 straight games against the two teams right behind the Indians. So, yes, Tigers fans, as an Indians fan, go Tigers. Help keep that separation there. But it's also starting to make people wonder, and I think stupidly, well, should they even sell? Look, they're, you know, they had a walk-off win, two blowout wins, and okay, they lost the first game out of the break, but they've won three in a row, three out of the last four. They're starting to look, they're starting to come together, Pepper. They're starting to come together. Yeah, as Anthony Fenech said in the Detroit Free Press today on this exact subject, too little, too late. The moves still have to be made. But a fascinating one. ABC7 in Detroit was talking about this because, you know, teams are still calling, the Cubs are still interested. And I made mention of this yesterday, that the Cubs should still be trying to be interested in an Alex Avila, if for no other reason than see their catching fiasco, namely the Miguel Montero chewing out his teammates and then getting sent away because of it. I believe he's in Baltimore or something now. I forget where, but I know he's not a Cub and he's in the American League. I'm pretty sure it's Baltimore. So that means the Cubs, in theory, have a hole at catcher. And we all know Alex Avila is bordering on a career year right now. And he's not part of the long-term plans, as we know. Well, as I mentioned, when it comes to baseball trades, the hardest thing to prognosticate when you're filtering through the rumors is exactly what prospects are we talking here. Because, you know, the team could have different wants or different needs when they look at the giant list of prospects. Well, a couple of interesting ones have actually been brought up. This is, again, from ABC7 up in Detroit. These would all be Cub prospects. And, you know, the Cubs don't have a lot of those left. They've spent a bunch of them. But then again, they have a young core regardless of where they're at now, so they can afford to actually do that, unlike some other teams, for example. But they're looking at a couple guys, a couple of pitchers, an outfielder, and the one who's at, I believe, A-ball somewhere right now. He's got some zip on the fastball. Jose Albertus. Jose Albertus is the one name that got brought up as a possibility, you know, from the Cubs. So, obviously, we'll see on this one. The other, of course, story when it comes to Tigers and trade rumors, of course, continues to be what's going to happen with Justin Verlander. Are the Tigers going to be willing to eat some cash on this one? Because that's pretty much what they're going to have to do. And Mike Eisenberg, in a special to the Detroit Free Press, was writing about all this, stating, among other things, that maybe it was a tactical mistake back in December. You guys recall, back in December, when Al Avila at the GM meetings said, yeah, we're going to be slashing the payroll, and anyone on the roster was available. But word from some, and Eisenberg in this article quotes numerous times former Mets GM Steve Phillips, that other executives, and this is why moves didn't happen back in December, were saying that Al Avila wanted salary relief in addition to prospects. And as we've been discussing in these last couple weeks when Verlander trade possibilities have come up, that's been the problem. That's been the gag right there. How much are and should the Tigers be eating on this? Because there's no way you're going to be able to trade Justin Verlander without eating some of the $28 million he's owed next season and the $28 million he's owed the season after that. That's just how things work. Especially if you're Al Avila and you want to get those prospects, which is the real goal here, then yeah, you're going to have to bite the proverbial bullet and eat some cash. This is what's stalling a Justin Verlander deal, people. Make no mistake about it. It is not the prospects so much as it is how much the Tigers are going to be forced to eat on this, which is also why you're hearing rumors about, I believe it's Houston, for example, interested in Michael Fulmer. Which, yeah, if you're a Tigers fan, you should worry about that one. You should. Because he's obviously young, cheap, and very good, the type of pitcher you could build around. And that's why other teams also want him. Because he's young, cheap, and controllable. It's also why, because I know a few Tiger fans out there, you're scratching your heads every time this name comes up, Justin Wilson. Why would we trade Justin Wilson? Okay, we got him for one more year, but he's actually a bullpen arm that doesn't suck. And we all know that's been the Tigers' problem, that they can't seem to get past as the bullpen continues to stink. The rumor at this point in time, MLB.com's John Paul Morosi, who I played some clips yesterday in the montage for you when he joined the Fox Sports Detroit crew over the weekend, Nationals, and we mentioned that they probably weren't done with their bullpen trades. They went, picked up Madison and Doolittle from the A's, but they can't be done. They just can't be, you know, because, well, the Nationals have a really stinky bullpen, and quite frankly, with everything they've done the last few years, it would be an abject failure if they get bounced in the division series yet again. That's a team whose minimum goal, has to be making it to the National League Championship Series. Well, word is that they're looking at Pirates lefty Tony Watson and Tigers lefty closer Justin Wilson. Now, Justin Wilson, believe it or not, as I've been thinking about this, because as we know, this is a subject that isn't going to go away until these moves are made or we hit the deadline, whichever comes first. Justin Wilson will probably get you the best haul back. Because as I mentioned, he signed through next year. At least I'm pretty sure he's signed through next year. He's younger. He's a good bullpen guy, and he's a lefty, which, of course, really helps a lot of that. So, you know, thinking about all this, you're probably going to get the best prospect haul back for a guy like Justin Wilson. And I'm quickly just checking again, just because I want to make sure. Yeah, Justin Wilson, he's at $2.7 million this year. Because he's now the closer, that'll probably go up, but it's in arbitration mode. So he's controllable through next year before he becomes a free agent. Now, excuse me, and that's where a lot of his talk comes from. Then, of course, you have the J.D. Martinez, you know, rumors out there as well. Many teams still thinking about him, especially in that National League West. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. So those guys will probably, you know, be traded. But then you get to the Michael Fulmer or Justin Verlander. It would be most ideal, I think most Tigers fans would agree with me on this, that if you're going to trade any of them, eat some of the money, make sure you get a good prospect or two back, and trade Verlander. Because you'd rather have Fulmer, you know, available for as long as you can. In fact, you know, like, here's what I mean by Fulmer and why I think that would upset Tigers fans, and I'd probably be right there with you. Homer's making $551,000 this year because he's under full team control. That'll be the case this winter, too. It's not listed here because the clock hasn't recalibrated yet. But when it does, he won't even go into his first arbitration until the winter of 18-19. And then, you know, a player gets like 3 years of that before they're a free agent. In other words, Michael Fulmer, assuming he's not traded, should be a Tiger for a minimum of 4 more years after this one. And he's proven enough to the point where young, good, controllable. Those are the three magic words, in a way, right there. And he is good. We know that. All-star this year, deserved. Rookie of the year last year, definitely deserved. That would feel like a counterproductive move, even though you'll blatantly get a haul back for him. Make no mistake about that. The flip side of that is if you were to trade Michael Fulmer, that would probably be the best haul. Because you'll get all the prospects without having to eat any salary because he's a young, controllable guy making something in the K's, not mills. So there's no money to be eaten with that one. But there's still a lot of different angles that this could go. And they're not the only ones. I'm still wondering out loud what, if anything, the Indians are going to do. Just based on the fact that unless your name is Brian Shaw, Austin Jackson, or Carlos Santana, you're signed through at least next year. And especially if you compare it to the Tigers, all relatively affordable. Like next year, assuming no trades, you know, Miggy will make 30. Justin Verlander will make 28. Zimmerman, 24. Upton, 22. Victor Martinez, 18. Highest paid player for the Indians next year will be 18.5 on Edwin Encarnacion. Yeah, you read that right. Edwin Encarnacion will only make next year $500,000 more than Victor Martinez and less than Zimmerman, Upton, Cabrera, and Verlander. And that's the Indians' highest paid guy. Yes, when you compare the Indians and the Tigers, for example, there's no comparison. You want to be in the Indians' position. Not nearly as expensive, and most of those guys are signed. So I still really have no idea what, if anything, they're going to do. So much so that I'm almost thinking, maybe see if you can pawn a Yan Gomes off on somebody. Because I got that kid, another problem the Tigers wish they had, which is they don't have many prospects left, of course, as we know. Well, the Indians at least have one more that in the next calendar year, I promise you will see at Progressive Field. Francisco Mejia, he of the 50-something game hitting streak last year, hitting well over 300 again, and he's an outstanding defensive catcher. He's currently in Double-A. But I smell a call-up minimum in September and actual playing time next year. And if he hits anything like he's been in the minors, then you can say bye to Yan Gomes and no one will lose any sleep over it. Which is the only reason you haven't heard me say the Indians should try to see if they could pry Alex Avila away and maybe give him Gomes and a prospect or two for Avila for a rental and then just bring Francisco Mejia up later. So I have no idea what the Indians are going to do, and I still very well think they could stand pat. I really do. Then you get to the third team in the region. This has been a blatant seller since before spring training. That's your Reds, Chris. Chris Mitchell joining me here on the extravaganza. Bob France, of course, off today. He'll be back in the big chair tomorrow. 866-240-1065, by the way. We got time for phone calls this hour. And we know they're going to trade people. They can't trade Feldman anymore, though. He just got hurt.
Right.
That's a bummer. But, this has been rumored since day one, Zach Cozart and his soon-to-be donkey will probably be sent out. And, I mean, that's been speculated for quite some time now, and his all-star bid, well, that helps the Reds because it allows them to up the price, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. For the last year and a half, Cozart has really come on strong and peaked, and that's going to help his trade value. Now, you have the Washington Nationals who lost their starting shortstop. I think he broke his wrist or something like that, so they might be entertaining the idea of trading for him.
But they got to go bullpen first. They got to secure the rest of that bullpen, I would think, if I'm Washington, before I dive into anything else.
Right. Right. But Cozart is one of those names that has been thrown out there for the Cincinnati Reds on the trading block. I even heard rumors of possibly a Devin Mesoraco. He's coming back from Double A right now on a DL stint.
What about their closer? People are always looking for
Rizzo Iglesias, yes.
Now, would you entertain, as a Reds guy, Cozart and Iglesias to Washington for like four prospects? Would you entertain something like that if you're as a Reds guy? Because that'll certainly get the Nats' attention. They're looking for more bullpen help. And it's like, okay, we're going to up our price because we'll throw in Cozart with it, but now it's going to cost you four prospects. Two of them have to be top-level guys instead of two or three.
Right. If that
it sounds like something they should entertain is what I'm saying.
I would entertain it, but like you said, what you alluded to, it better be your top two prospects, and then you can throw in a number 12 and a number 16 with it as well. But you better be throwing some pretty good prospects back towards the Reds, for Iglesias especially.
Yeah, because bullpen arms are what they are, especially at this time of year. And as we just know, the Nationals are that blatant team that is needing those type of guys. So that's kind of where we are, on the trade front. Not much has happened, obviously, since the weekend when you had Quintana going from the White Sox to the Cubs, and then Doolittle and Madsen from the A's to the Nationals, though I maintain I do not think Washington is done. But if anything, as I also mentioned, the Quintana one is interesting just because that feels like it sets the market for what you should be getting back in return. Like, compare this to the Tigers and Verlander, for example. Okay, you may not get that many prospects because of the money that you'd have to be willing to eat, but you still should be able to get two or three and one of them top flight and then eat some money. And basically, the Quintana deal does set a little bit of the market for kind of what pitchers will make. So obviously, as we know, this story will be ongoing for these next couple of weeks. You got any thoughts on this? Love to hear it at 866-240-1065 here on this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. We're going to go into other things a little bit later. We're going to dive more into some of these trade things. Mark Normandin, SB Nation MLB editor, we're going to talk to him. We're going to play it back because I thought that was a good interview, and it's a good primer once again in case anybody missed it. We're going to do that top of next hour. We're also going to do what I like to think of as an extended public service announcement at about 4:40 today. We're going to talk with a gentleman named Doug Krieger, a very, very good guy. And he is going to be the instructor down in Bowling Green starting next month for the next football officiating class for the OHSAA here in Ohio. He told me some interesting, albeit kind of nail-biting, almost frightening numbers, he told me, the biggest one of which stuck in my mind, that as of right now, there are apparently only 25 varsity-eligible football officials left in all of Wood County. Yeah, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out that's a problem. So we're going to talk with Doug Krieger. He is going to be the instructor for this late summer, early falls edition of the football officiating class. So anybody who's interested, we're going to get you the lowdown on how you go about doing that, because it's that type of time. We want to be looking into that and really what else could be done to help the still very critical need that not just football, but every sport, but football will, of course, take center stage, especially at that high school level. Bill Clark will be back, of course, this fall with Central Catholic. We'll have Perrysburg games over on Talk Radio 100.7 and all the other football stuff that goes on with your Friday Night Lights and then college and the NFL, but especially at that high school level. It's not just varsity. There's the JV and there's the freshman. So we're going to talk with Doug Krieger at about 4:40 on all of those things. And like I said, I treat this less, especially since I'm kind of involved now. I mean, like I said, Doug's a very good guy. Ran into him while he was my partner for some umpiring over the weekend. No names, please. And actually, he was the guy. You want to blame somebody, folks? We always like to joke that I'm ruining young kids' careers right at that early age by being their official. Blame this guy. He was my basketball instructor, too. So he knows what he's talking about, and he's been around the block a few times on these kind of things. So we're going to talk to him at about 4:40. We're going to take a quick time out now, check a traffic, local sports center update, check of the weather, and then I'm going to dive into some more of these numbers that I start off. And, of course, any of your phone calls, welcome at 866-240-1065. I'm going to dive into some more of these numbers and a couple of these articles I'm reading. These are from, like, Business Journal, Sports Business Daily, and the Business Insider. But they have some really good articles. The Business Insider one, I'll even freely say right now, is from May, but it's still very pertinent right now. And the other ones actually was published today. And the general theme here is TV numbers are declining now. After going up for the better part of the last decade consistently, they're starting to decline as people are cutting the cords and looking for other avenues to watch their team and watch the game, and how that's going to possibly have a severe long-term effect the next time TV deals are made. So we're going to dive into some of that. Take your phone calls at 866-240-1065. Hey, want to pass along this fun message, too. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, the Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, and American Airlines, they have a chance for you to fly to Charlotte, North Carolina. That doesn't sound very fun, but they'll then fly you from Charlotte, once you get from Toledo to Charlotte, to anywhere in the continental U.S. So it's a flyaway package. And so be listening starting tomorrow here on the Extravaganza for details on how you can qualify from Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So that's a fun little thing that we're going to really be starting up definitely come tomorrow. All right, quick timeout, check of weather, check of traffic, local sports center update, more on these TV numbers and why it's a bad sign for sports and players' salaries. That's next here on the Extravaganza, Tuesday edition, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are here on this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Cushlin, Chris Mitchell hanging around with me today. We're in for Bob France. He's back in the big chair tomorrow. And then the big chair starting Thursday for Bob and the Extravaganza. That'll shift to the media tent, the 10th tee, or between the first and the 10th tee, I should say, at Highland Meadows for your Marathon Classic coverage. Mike Miller, of course, he was out there yesterday. He's going to be out there on the golf course all week long. Cheap Seats Mick Gonzalez on Sunday morning. That will be out on the course as well. And the weekend shows, by the way, folks, are going to have extended times. Usually Cheap Seats Mick Gonzalez, that's 9 to 10. Well, that's going to be 9 to 11 on Sunday. And then Great Lakes Golf today with Mike Jameson and the crew, usually 8 to 10. Well, they're going a full 4 hours live from Highland Meadows on Saturday, 8 to noon. And then yours truly, I'll be out at the golf course rummaging around and messing around for most of Saturday and Sunday afternoon, giving you leaderboard updates on what's going on over there at the Marathon Classic until a champion is crowned. And I absolutely mean that. Like I said, there was a couple years ago, I think it was 3 years ago now, they had a three-hole playoff with three golfers involved, no less, to decide the title. So, yeah, I left a good hour and a half after I planned to, because when I say I'm going to be there giving you reports until a champ is crowned, that's exactly what I mean. So our continuing coverage of the Marathon Classic rolls along as we are now in one of those fun Toledo sports. We were going to have some golf people on. I'm sure Mr. Heller will join Bob at some point, especially while he's out there Thursday, Friday. It's also, incidentally, golf-wise, and I'm working on a few things for this later in the week, zooming out from just Toledo and the Marathon Classic, on the golf front, in case you didn't notice, and I know for some of you without Tiger Woods playing anymore, it's hard to notice, but it's British Open week to boot. So we're going to. I'm trying to work on some things to get somebody to talk about the British Open in the field and the course and all that stuff, because just like the Marathon Classic, round one will tee off on Thursday. Early in the morning, get your coffee ready on Thursday. That's round one of the British Open as well. 866-240-1065, numbers to join us. Anything, everything, by the way, always fair game when yours truly. I don't care if it's a Tuesday or a Friday. If it's yours truly, Jim Cushlin in for Bob France, anything and everything, fair game. But especially if you got some thoughts on the various trade rumors, that's obviously our continuing story, you know, as we go forward. And by the way, good news for both the Indians and the Tigers, at least on the field yesterday. Tigers, got another blowout win against the Royals, and as an Indians fan, I say thank you because it keeps Kansas City three games back and puts them back under 500. And it's from an Indians perspective, you're actually rooting for the Tigers these next 10 days. It's four at Kansas City, three at Minnesota, then three back at Comerica Park again against Kansas City. Those are the two teams chasing the Indians right now. Sorry, Tigers and White Sox. I can't claim you as chasing the Indians really anymore for this season. Indians, they snapped their skid yesterday, got a 5-3 win by the Bay against the Giants. Second game of that series tonight for you Night Owls, I believe, 10-15. Yeah, 10-15, the first pitch time for that one. And it was a good thing for the Indians to snap that skid. You want to get back on the winning track because, if for no other reason, they were on a four-game losing streak. They hadn't lost four in a row since July something of 2015. All 29 other teams in Major League Baseball had one, at least one, and in most cases, multiple four-plus game losing streaks in the entire two calendar years that the Indians went without it. So they ended that skid before it could get any more out of hand. And you know, that's the funny part. For all those Indians fans who are waiting for them to, you know, pull away and play better, it's a game and a half lead over the Twins right now, three over the Royals. I keep maintaining this right now is the time to do it. Failed in Oakland, got swept. Two more against the Giants in San Francisco. That's a terrible team this year. Then you take a day off, back home for Toronto. That should be a series win. Monday was an off day. It's a makeup game against your Reds from when they got rained out back in May. No offense, Chris. The Indians should win that game, too. The Reds are terrible. Not as terrible as the Giants or Padres or A's or anybody, but I'm sorry to say that they're not good, as you are fully aware. Then you get the Angels for three. Then it's at the blatantly, obviously selling Chicago White Sox. The Indians do not play a winning team again until deadline day itself. Oh, sorry, on deadline day itself when they open a series at Fenway. So you have to make hay right now and start pulling away when you're playing these, well, not very good teams. And, of course, as we know, starting by getting swept by the Oakland A's, yeah, that's not going to work at all. 866-240-1065. All right, I said I had some numbers for you. And I do. Related to some of these TV things. And I want to start out. This was put online today by the Sports Business Journal. And the headline, local MLB ratings throw a sinker. TV rating, the TV ratings doldrums are hitting local baseball. 18 of the 29 U.S.-based teams showing ratings declines so far this season. 18 of the 29 U.S. Yeah, they're not counting Toronto, Ontario. The measurements for them Canadians, I guess, is different. Whatever. There's still 29 to choose from. And 18 of those 29 are seeing their ratings drop. That, to me, is significant. Because as I mentioned when I started talking about this first segment, just think of the Indians conversation we've had. We haven't had to have it, thank goodness, this year. Again, I know they're 27th in attendance, but at least they're over 20,000, so that's why we haven't had the conversation. Last year they were 28, 29 or whatever, and it was 15. Yeah, that's open for conversation. But, you know, we've had those conversations the last couple of years about, oh, the Indians are playing well now and nobody's going. But in that entire time period, TV ratings on Sports Time Ohio for the Indians games kept going up. Consistently, not dropping at all. To their credit, the Indians are one of the few teams whose ratings are increasing. In fact, their ratings have increased by the third most in all of baseball. Indians games on Sports Time Ohio are up 29% from where they were a year ago. The only teams doing better are the Braves and the Yankees. Tigers, by the way, not doing so well. They have a top five overall rating this year at 5.42, but that is down 22% from a year ago. Ouch. Could be worse, though, guys. Where are they? Could be worse. You could be the Oakland A's. 0.59 for the rating, and that's down 21%. So they went from crappy to craptastic, basically. So it could be worse, Tigers fans. It could be the A's. And then, of course, to boot, if you don't want to watch them on TV, then you have to go to the mausoleum. So there's just no room for win. Although, side note, during one of the games that the Indians lost over the weekend, the Sports Hub Ohio guys, Matt Underwood and Rick Manning, were talking about this, and I found it's interesting. Yeah. If you are an Oakland fan, for you, for the first time ever, I feel bad for you. Because, you know, we all know the Raiders are moving. Again. I lost the Browns. I always mark that. I always say to people, that ended my childhood because I was 14 when they moved. I never felt like a kid after that whole escapade. I can't imagine losing my team twice. So I feel for you there, Oakland. Everyone forgets this. Oakland's going to lose the Warriors. Because in a couple years, they're going to be moving across the bay out of Oracle Arena into a brand new arena in San Francisco. Hockey is in San Jose, and that's not going anywhere, but that's San Jose. And if you've ever taken out a map of that part of California, San Jose is not really next door to San Francisco or Oakland. You got to go, like, I'm assuming California traffic, so you got to probably drive an hour down one of those jam-packed freeways just to get to San Jose. It's a weird setup. Take out a map, you'll see what I'm talking about. And yes, by the way, take out a map. Don't look on your phone. Take out an actual paper map before we all forget how to read those. Anywho, so you have the Raiders, the Warriors, and then the A's in that mausoleum. Who knows what's going to happen? Commissioner Rob Manfred said over the All-Star break, well, he named a couple cities, Montreal, Charlotte, Mexico City, but firmly stated, before we even really think about that for expansion, and he did bring up those three cities, he said, something has to be done about Tampa and Oakland stadiums first and foremost. Because if nothing gets done, then expect either of those teams to move. We're only a couple years away from the A's being the only thing in Oakland. And so I feel bad for them, especially as long as they're wasting away in that god-awful stadium. But back to some of these numbers. The point is, most teams are down. 18 of 29 U.S. markets are down. And that's a change. Because most TV markets, regardless of where you were, have seen their ratings do nothing but go up over the most of the last decade. Again, citing Cleveland, even with all the complaints, legitimate ones, about the Indians' lack of attendance, I know whenever that subject came up on this show, I always tagged it with the line, well, that's all true, don't forget, their Sports Time Ohio ratings are up X percent, whatever it was at that moment in time, and that was all true. They may not have been going to the ballpark, but they sure as heck were watching on TV. And then, as I point out, they're one of the few franchises this year that's doing really well. They have the third highest increase just behind the Braves and the Yankees, but a lot of other teams are not doing so well. Like, here's a perfect example. The Dodgers, they're in the bottom five of overall rating. The Dodgers. At 1.48 in that gigantic market in L.A. And yet that's a 24% increase. They and the Indians are some of the few that are actually increasing. You know, the White Sox, the Cubs are down. Yes, even the Cubs are down this year. Red Sox games, 20% increase in the last 10 years. White Sox, second biggest decline. So most teams aren't doing well. Even the Cardinals, in the supposed best baseball town in America, in St. Louis, Cardinals down 12% this year on Fox Sports Midwest. That's after a 19% decline last year. Though their overall rating is still 7.06, third highest. But they're dropping. So the TV's starting to go down. People are cutting the cords. People want to stream this, especially if you're younger. And that leads me to a Business Insider article from back in May. And they were talking with Turner Sports' Craig Berry throughout this. And a couple of lines before we hit our quick timeout, and if you got time for a phone call, maybe we'll squeeze you in at 866-240-1065. There are a couple of lines that stood out to me. One was this. This is from Craig Berry of Turner Sports. Quote, I will tell you, engagement is the most important metric in our industry. Whether people are watching it, liking it, sharing it on social media. The fact is that people, even the cord cutters and cord nervers, aren't going to stop watching sports. Well, I can tell you that's true. I just kind of spelled out I'd be cutting the cord too if I could find a way to watch a random Indians game in July or a Cavs game in January. But I can't do it yet because it hasn't fully filtered out there. So Barry continues, you need to meet them where they are and give them the type of content they want. What do they want? Access, access, access. And by access, he means ways to stream the game online, on your phone, on your iPad. Even if you have to deal with some silly commercials between innings or during a timeout if you're watching basketball or something. They want to be able to do that without, and most of you will probably run into this, without having to enter your current cable provider. So I've tried, that's part of the reason I haven't done it yet. Because the ones that are blatantly out there that can do this, they're always asking you for what your actual TV cable company type thing is. You have to provide the access without that extra part. Because if you've already cut the cord, then you can't go to, say, a good one for baseball right now, Fox Sports Go. It's a little website. They do a lot of live things. We picked up live press conferences through them before. They offered a way to stream. But if you try to stream, you got to sign up with them and then enter, you know, I have UVerse, or I have DirecTV, or I have Buckeye Cable, or whatever it is. They want the access, especially the younger you are, but they don't want to have to buy in to some type of cable provider. This is the future problem that these sports leagues are going to have to deal with when they get to the next round of TV negotiations. And the premise here is, if this all keeps going the way it currently seems to be, and I believe as we go forward the next bunch of years, there will be more avenues and easier avenues to stream games, then by definition, when the contracts are up, the TV networks aren't going to offer them, the leagues, NBA, Major League Baseball, whatever it is, they're not going to offer nearly as much money. And since we now live in an area, in a time where you could say, those athletes make too much money, I'm going to protest by not going to the ball games. Sorry, it's 2017. That won't work anymore, as we've discussed. Not watching them on TV will probably be the thing that works. And as I read off some of these baseball numbers, that's starting to take effect. Tim in Toledo wants to jump in on this before we hit our quick timeout for a top of the hour. Good afternoon, Tim. How you doing?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. What's on your mind?
Well, I can tell you what the Dodgers' problem is, okay?
Go ahead.
3 years ago, Time Warner outbid Fox to get the Dodger game.
Oh, I'm starting to remember this, but continue. Yeah, I think I know where you're going with
this. Made a fortune for it. Well, what happens, the Los Angeles viewing area has three cable networks, of which Time Warner is one.
Right.
So their plan was to sell it to the other two cable networks, too.
Right.
They wanted so much for it because they paid so much for the Dodgers that the other two would not sign up. So therefore, only approximately one-third of the viewing households in Los Angeles are able to watch Dodger games.
Yes, I do remember all this now, and that's definitely part of the reason for where the Dodgers' numbers are, even though they're up in terms of percentage. Their average rating is in the bottom five because of exactly that. And that's part of, you know, the access thing. For me, Tim, my personal anecdote was just this past March, trying to watch the NCAA tournament. I watched the first two weekends on my phone only, or iPad, because if you were a UVerse customer, which I was, UVerse and the local CBS affiliate here were fighting. And so that first weekend of the tournament, especially, any of the CBS games, you couldn't watch them if you had UVerse because that station didn't come in. That's kind of the access issue. I feel I was lucky to be able to find an app that I was able to temporarily download and watch, because I'll tell you this, Tim, I would have been very, very salty. You guys know me. I'm a Virginia Tech guy, and that was the first time they were in the tournament in a decade, and that game happened to be CBS, and I was livid. About 15 minutes before that game tipped off, thinking, are you kidding me? I'm not going to be able to watch this game. Somebody's got to pay for this, and then I found the app. But that's part of it. You've got to be able to have that extra access, you know, going forward. And these types of issues, you know, resonate. When there's a cable provider fight like that one here for UVerse in Toledo, and you miss out on the big events, that resonates, and that sticks with people, and they don't like it.
Well, see, the Dodgers, they're making a fortune on this deal.
Oh, yeah.
The loser is Time Warner Cable. Because, you know, the advertising rates obviously went way down, covering one-third of the audience. But the Dodgers, no matter what the viewership is, at least until it's renegotiated, you know, Time Warner has to pay the full boat to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So they're getting low, they're getting rich, and Time Warner's taking a beating.
Yeah. No, and that's such a great call. Thanks for reminding me of that, Tim. Yeah, I had forgotten about that. That's part of the reason for where the Dodgers' rating number is, even though they're up 24% this year from this time a year ago. Yeah, that whole Time Warner fiasco out in L.A., how stupid is that? You have the biggest market, and your infighting is as meaning that only a third of your audience can actually tune in. This is the stuff that is starting to annoy people, and it's filtering down because the younger you are, the less likely you are to watch a game on TV. You'd rather find a way, you know, like watch ESPN app, for example. And that's only going to continue. You know, it's so bad that even the NBA, do you know what the average age of an NBA viewer watching the game only on old school television is? 40. You wouldn't have guessed that, would you? As Chris here in the studio is like, eyes bugged out, like, that can't be right. No, it is. Average age of a TV viewer for an NBA game right now is age 40.
I would guess like 24.
Do you know why it's not 24? Because all the younger ones are on their phone or iPad trying to watch the game through Watch ESPN or whatever else. And I'm using ESPN for NBA because, that you know, that's where that deal is. So that's just one example of it. But it's filtering out more and more, and it's only going to get worse as the next couple of years go by. And the long-term effect of this is going to be when we get to the next round of TV negotiations with the leagues, which, depending on your league and sport, we're talking somewhere between 2019 and 2025. That's when the TV deals that are currently in effect run out. Well, those TV networks, they're going to come to the table, and they're going to offer a lot less than they are right now. And that will directly affect owner revenue and player salary. It is entirely possible that 10 years from now, players, because of all this, will be making less than they are right now. It's a long-term thing to keep an eye on, and we will do that here as well. All right, quick timeout for top of the hour, check of traffic, all that good stuff. Back on the other side, we're going to dive into some more of this trade stuff. Mark Normandin, Major League Baseball editor at SB Nation, he will join us. And then Doug Krieger, he's the football instructor for the class that will be starting in Bowling Green. They need football officials in a way you could not believe. We're going to talk to him about how to do all that later on around 4:40. So we'll try squeezing some phone calls as we go along that hour as well. But some of those guests coming up and more of your phone calls and things here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back in hour number two here of this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin, Chris Mitchell hanging out with me as well. Today we're in for Bob France. Bob back in the big chair coming up tomorrow. And then starting Thursday and Friday, that big chair shifts from the from our studios here to Highland Meadows for Marathon Classic Week. And, of course, on that front, you know, don't forget Mike Miller. He is out there all week. Started yesterday. He's out there again today. He'll be out there for Drive Time all week long. And then over the weekend, we got lots of coverage of the Marathon Classic. Not only will yours truly be out there Saturday afternoon, all afternoon, Sunday, all afternoon, giving you leaderboard updates until a champion is crowned, we're also going to have plenty of others as well. You got Mike Jamison and Great Lakes Golf today, usually on our airwaves from 8 to 10 every Saturday. Oh, no, 8 to noon. We're giving them four full hours live out there at Highland Meadows. And then even Mick Gonzalez and Cheap Seats on Sunday morning, usually a 9 to 10 affair. It's going to be 9 to 11 this Sunday. So not only are they going to be live out there at Highland Meadows, extended coverage of their shows this weekend, too. So lots and lots of things, fun things that we're doing for the Marathon Classic. We're going to look at some golf things later in the week. It's also British Open week, so we'll be talking, obviously, more and more about that as the next bunch of days go by. About 4:40 here in this hour, we're going to talk with Doug Krieger. He is going to be the instructor for this year's football officiating class in Bowling Green. And incidentally, I've already looked up, unless you want to go to Columbus or something, and you want to be a football official, you got really one and a half choices. Bowling Green, taught by Doug Krieger, or there's a Defiance one, but that starts in a couple of days, and I think registration may be just about done for that one. But we'll ask Doug for the details on it. There is no officiating class for football in Lucas County this year. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. It's just the way the schedules, I guess, are. But the main theme is they still need people in a big, big, big time way. And even if you take the classes, I can attest, regardless of what sport, you won't be able to, officiate the Friday night varsity game for a couple years. And trust me, you don't want to walk right from the class to that kind of zoo with the parents all screaming at you and everything. But nonetheless, it's important to get new blood into not just football, but any of the other sports out there. So a little extended public service announcement coming up. Doug Krieger, football officiating class instructor. He's going to join us at about 4:40. Here in a couple minutes, we're going to play back something from yesterday because I think all of it's still pertinent. We've been talking a lot about the trade rumors. Mark Normandin of SB Nation, Major League Baseball editor at SB Nation. We talked a lot about some trade stuff and what to expect. So we're going to keep that primed for you because that's obviously an ongoing story. We're going to play that here in a couple of minutes. I want to go over just a couple more of these numbers as I was reading through the break. The ratings being down for baseball this year, which is one of those signs of this whole thing that I was talking about last segment about, TV contracts, the next time they come up, the changing media landscape, more people wanting to try to stream these games. That includes myself. I'd have cut the cords, honestly, already. The only thing for me personally that's keeping the cord plugged in is I'm still trying to figure out how to watch those Indians in July or Cavs in January, and I can revise that sentence for you Detroit fans out there. Tigers in July or Red Wings and Pistons in January. I'm still working, or everybody's still trying to work out how to do that without paying either extra fees or registering through whatever cable-type company you happen to subscribe to. We're eventually getting to that slowly but surely. And when that happens, the next round of TV negotiations with the leagues are going to be very interesting because I expect them to be for a lot less money than the ones that just got signed for. And since that's the main revenue driver, not gate receipts anymore, that's why we've been stressing whenever this subject comes up these last couple weeks that go ahead, you can go ahead and protest by not showing up at the ballpark anymore because those athletes are paid too much. But it's not 1995 anymore. That strategy alone won't work because they make most of their revenue nowadays from these mammoth TV deals. Well, if the media landscape changes, as it kind of sort of is right now, and I got to believe will be even more changed by, say, a 2021, I'm just spitballing here, but that's the block of time we're talking about when these contracts would expire and have to be renegotiated, they're going to be for less money. And that less money on the deals means less revenue for owners, which also means less money for players. And it's going to be messed up when it happens. I hope Richard Sherman doesn't decide that the TV deals are for less money, so we're going to strike so we don't have to take pay cuts. Expect things like that to happen, too, I'm sad to say. So I want to throw out a couple more of these numbers as I was scanning through more of the baseball ratings. This is from Sports Business Journal, sportsbusinessdaily.com. And it published just yesterday, so these are comparing numbers right now to where they were a year ago. And again, the theme here is most teams' ratings are down this year. Red Sox, for example. I mentioned the Cardinals last segment. They're down. They're down 12% this year, and that's following a 19% decrease last year. Red Sox, they're down 19% this year. We mentioned the Dodgers, and they have a little partial asterisk because of the Time Warner fiasco out in L.A., where only a third of the people at first were able to even get that. What's another good one? Where's another good one? All right, here you go. The Giants. Horrible season, right? They're basically a last place team. They're down 28%. White Sox, down 29%. Royals still have the highest overall rating at 7.69, but that's down 37%. I mentioned the Cardinals. Sad to say, Detroit Tigers. Though you still remain, if you're a Tigers fan watching those games on Fox Sports Detroit, well, the ratings are still good, 5.42. That's fifth best in baseball. Difference between this year at this time and last year at this time. Problem is for the Tigers and Fox Sports Detroit, that's down 22%. Angels are down 15% from the next to nothing they already had. We already laughed at the Oakland A's, down 21% to a 0.59. Yeah, that means people are probably watching more reruns of, like, America's Funniest Home Videos or something stupid like that than they're watching A's games on the NBC Sports California out there. The Indians are one of the few good news. They have the second highest overall rating this year at 7.52, and that also represents a 29% increase, which is the third highest increase behind only the Braves and the Yankees. Pirates, not doing as well as they did the last couple years, down 27% this year. So that's the main theme. 19 or 18 of the 29 U.S. teams, they're not counting Toronto, down this year. And that's the first time that's happened. And the whole, that's the canary in the coal mine kind of thing to me on this whole subject. Because the point is, expect those numbers to continue to go down, not just in baseball, but in the other sports. As people, the younger you are, the more likely you are to want different ways of accessing the games. That's why, to me, the biggest line in the Business Insider article from May on this subject, talking to a Craig Berry from Turner Sports, is, you know, you need to meet people where they are and give them the type of content they want. Because even if they cut cords, they're not going to stop watching sports. And what do they want? They want the access. And by access, they mean streaming access on your computer, on your phone, on your iPad, and your smartphone, whatever. Not on old school TV with a cable company. And that's where we're headed. Eventually, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen maybe even for next year. But as we keep going forward, it will. And that will mess up a lot of how these TV contracts with the leagues are done. And that's going to reduce a lot of revenue. Keep your eye on that as we go forward the next bunch of years. All right. We're also talking a lot of trade stuff. Those rumors are all still swirling around. Mentioned the couple with J.D. Martinez, the Astros and NL West teams looking into him. Michael Fulmer or Alex Avila. Cubs are still checking in on him. Michael Fulmer, couple teams still want him. Justin Wilson's another one. Nationals not done. So there's a lot of trade rumors out there. And this is still a very, very timely interview that Bob and I had yesterday with Mark Normandin, MLB editor at SBNation.com. We're talking a lot of these trade rumors. So here's that to keep you abreast of all those that are going on.
And joining us now to break down all things Major League Baseball is Mark Normandin, who is the baseball editor for MLB editor for SBNation.com. Mark, thanks for joining us out here in Toledo. How are you?
Doing well. It's nice to be done with all-star festivities and moving on to, you know, a bunch of trades that may or may not ever happen, but they're fun to talk about.
What kinds of duties did you find yourself encumbered with during All-Star Week?
Oh, we had a team out in Miami, and I was back in the office, so it was a lot of coordinating back and forth.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah.
Taking all their work and turning into other work. And
I was going to feel really bad for you that you had to go down to Miami for a week. You know, that would have been really terrible. That's hard. But no, you actually had to work. They had all the fun in the sun, and you had to coordinate it all back the home base.
We sent Grant Frisby down there, and he's never experienced humidity in his life because he's been West Coast his whole life. So his first experience with humidity was going to Miami, and yeah, it was good for him, but now he knows, and I don't think he likes it. I don't think he'd be moving there.
Yeah, at least the roof was closed though, so he didn't have to worry about it inside. You know, when they were doing the derby and the actual event. But yeah, you step outside there in the summertime. Miami in July is not a pleasant place to be. I can tell you that. I lived there for a cup of coffee, and believe me, it is not a very pleasant place to be in the summertime. Okay, let's talk about some places that are pleasant to be. Specifically, how about Washington, D.C., because a move was made. Washington acquires the A's 2016 closer, Ryan Madsen, and their 2014 closer, Sean Doolittle. What the heck's going on there?
Well, the Nationals traded for two good relievers, which means the Nationals now have two good relievers.
That's only two.
So that was probably... That was really the whole focus of the trade, is they looked at Matt Albers, who's the only guy who's pitched well this year, and they're like, yeah, we probably can't expect that to keep happening, huh? I think they had, I may be off by, you know, a decimal or something, but I think they had a 5.31 ERA as a team, their bullpen, through this morning. So getting Doolittle and Madsen is, you know, it's not tiny. That's the kind of thing that could keep them from dropping, you know, yet another LDS, an LDS, which is, you know, they've got so many bullpen memories. None of them are good from the playoffs, and they were pretty much setting themselves up to lose in the first round again this year.
Yeah,
so,
I think
that might not even be the end of the bullpen changes.
I certainly love the idea of seeing them in a series, perhaps in LDS, or I'm sorry, LCS, against the Dodgers. I would love to see that pitching, those lineups against one another. But you're right, it would be a mismatch if it came down to the bullpens as they were constructed. So the question now is, how much of a difference does that make for them in a potential series against maybe the best team in baseball like that? And then secondly, do you think they're done in Washington?
I think there's room to add another reliever or two, even. The David Robertson trade rumors have been swirling around them for months and months and months, and eventually someone's going to take him off the White Sox hands. There's really no reason it can't be the Nationals. You know, they don't have a closer that's doing anything spectacular over there, and no one, you know, there's no one who's above being replaced. Even Doolittle and Madsen, as great as they are, and you could slot either of them in as the closer. At least they're former closers, so there's no awkwardness there where they've been traded for and now they're getting a demotion. So there's room to bring in someone like Robertson. And if you can do a Doolittle, Madsen, Robertson bridge in the playoffs, you're in a great place. And you might not even need to use all three of them in a single game when you've got guys like Scherzer and Strasburg up there.
Yeah, that's a great point. No question about it. We're talking to Mark Normanton, who is the baseball editor for SBNation.com. He wrote today on the website about this trade with the Nationals. And our man Jim Cushlin here with me as well. Mark has got a question for you. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, and to follow this up with the Nationals, I've been kind of watching them a little bit in the National League because, you know, the rest of the National League East has been garbage since day one. You know, I've been feeling since April you can basically pen them in as the chance. But, yeah, they have to be able to get some more bull. And I think more. I know what you had just said, but I got to believe that there's at least one more trade involving the Nationals and getting a bullpen guy. Because if you're Washington, you can't let this happen again. If they just get to the playoffs and then bow out because of bad bullpen stuff in the division series, then you can righteously call this season a failure. I don't care how many games they would win or how awesome Max Scherzer, the former Tiger, is in. You have to make another bullpen move because if I'm a Washington fan, or even the front office, minimal acceptability is at least making it to the NLCS. You can't be losing in the best of five opening round as they have in the past. You can't do it again. They have to advance.
And it's been the same thing with them every time they've lost, essentially, which is no one did anything to fully address it. Even this offseason, they let Mark Melancon walk, and a pitcher they added because they needed help in the bullpen during the season, and then they did nothing to address it. So getting these two guys is a good start. They definitely could use more help. I mean, not to bring up a painful memory from a year ago, but you know, you saw what happened when the Indians didn't have enough pitching. It carried them through to a certain point, but then they were all those guys were tired by the end.
Yeah.
And the Nationals, even if they succeed, can set themselves up for that kind of situation. It's what happens to Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, pretty much annually, too. People talk about it like he's not clutch or something, or you don't want him in a big win game. It's because the Dodgers run him down. Like, he's the only guy they can rely on. And it just puts them in a terrible position. So avoiding that is really, should be the number one priority for the Nats for the next week.
Mark, since you know, let's use that as a segue, because I was going to ask you anyway at some point about potential Tigers to be dealt. We, of course, cover the Tigers closely here in Toledo, as well as the Indians to the east of us. But Justin Verlander is a guy that a lot of people have talked about moving, but the Tigers are making it very, very difficult because either A, they're asking for the moon and the stars and more in terms of prospects back, and B, they don't want to pay nearly as much of the fair share that they would have to pay of Verlander's contract. But having said that, the name Dodgers has come up a couple of times in the conversations we've had as far as Verlander. So they don't have to, you know, run down Clayton Kershaw, and it's not such a difficult thing in the postseason. You've got Kershaw and you got Alex Wood, who's tremendous. Would a guy like Verlander fill in the middle of that order or that rotation somewhere in the third spot or so? Would that be something that they might be willing to make a move for?
Verlander's at the top part of his career where if someone in that front office or coaching staff thinks they can fix what's going on with him, I could see them doing it. Because the Tigers might not want to give up too many prospects, might want a certain level of prospect back, and they might not want to pay too much money, but you're going to have to give up on one of those or the other. So if the Tigers decide they're going to pay a huge chunk of that, get Verlander's spot open up, get something back for him, you know, that's probably the thing that will work the best for him and probably what the Dodgers would be amenable to. I don't know if he's the best fit just because just because he's been so poor this year. But it's all because it's after such a strong 2016. But he also had the poor start to 2016 that kept everyone from seeing just how good the season really was. So, you know, he's kind of at that age and that money, and there's just enough contract left where you wonder if the numbers are ever going to work out, or if Tigers are really just going to have to sit here and deal with whatever is left of Verlander, good or bad.
Yeah, and there's some question we were talking about before you came on. There's some question as to whether the Tigers really want to move him at all. And maybe the reason why they're just being so obstinate when it comes to prospects and money is because they really don't want to move him, because they don't want to alienate the fans, because his, you know, his career is there in Detroit, and maybe they just don't want to see that history kind of wiped out by putting him in another city. So, you know, it's possible that's not going to happen. What about the rest of the Tigers, though? Again, they've got to be sellers, even though they're only, and I use that word loosely because it's today, only six games out, thanks to the Indians struggling at Oakland, and they had a couple of wins in a row for the Tigers, but they're going to be sellers. They know that they're not a real contender here. JD Martinez, Justin Wilson, you know, you mentioned a reliever, maybe Washington adding another one. That's another name that might be interesting to them. I think Justin Wilson is interesting to a lot of people. Ian Kinsler potentially being another name. What do you see happening there? How many of these guys do you see being moved?
It's going to be the fringe guys, or the guys with little time left, like JD Martinez, who's obviously great, but, you know, the Tigers aren't in a position to extend, to re-sign him. They have so much money on the books right now that's not, it's not in a good place. You know, it's not good money. You've got all that Verlander money. You've got, you know, God forbid, Miguel Cabrera is never going to be a huge star again. You know, he's still playing well, but he hasn't been Miguel Cabrera.
Right.
You know, Justin Upton's been fine, but he's going to probably opt out because the deal is positioned, you know, positioned to reward him for that sort of thing. Jordan Zimmerman's been just a horrible disaster, so they're not going to be able to move those guys. Like, there's probably no deal where they trade off some very important asset but attach Jordan Zimmerman to it, you know, to kind of make that go away. So it's more likely that you're going to see guys like you said, Justin Wilson, JD Martinez, maybe Kinsler, if a team needs help at second base, or maybe even the Red Sox at third base, if they can't make something work with, like, the Mets and Asdrubal Cabrera or Martin Prado. You know, Dombrowski knows Kinsler. He traded for him in the first place. Could be a fit there.
The Jim question here again. What about the market for an Alex Avila, especially to the Cubs with their possible catching situation? I kind of thought Avila played well enough, to my surprise, to maybe be one of the backup catchers for the AL All-Star team. He didn't, but he's having one of his better seasons in a while. It's a one-year deal. He's a veteran. He's not part of the Tigers' long-term plans. What do you see the market for Alex Avila?
There are multiple teams. Go back to the Red Sox again. Probably maybe use a catcher. There will definitely be teams vying for a catcher. I'm not sure what you're going to get for the rental, but that's a player whose value might be more clear as the deadline approaches instead of right now. As teams start to see who their competitors have picked up and just how much they need to do and how much they need to give up in order to keep up.
You know, Mark, we're talking to Mark Norman, and who is a baseball editor for SB Nation. You wrote, speaking of the Red Sox, and you mentioned them twice in the last answer, you wrote a little bit on Friday about Pablo Sandoval, the Panda Bear, who was once, you know, the toast of San Francisco, and, you know, such a great hitter and such a lovable guy and so on and so forth. One of the all-time worst contracts, one of the worst free agent signings. Yeah, I'd like to say that this would be a cautionary tale for teams, but I don't think it will be, because teams that are desperate will give guys extraordinary contracts that they can't possibly live up to, particularly toward the back end. But boy, this really is one of the worst. Sandoval DFA'd last week.
Yeah, and like you said, there's no real lesson to take from it. You know, people like to say, oh, obviously Sandoval was going to, you know, when he was on the wrong side at 30, he was going to balloon and he wouldn't be able to do anything anymore. You know, this all happened before that, and he came into camp in great shape, and he's still in really great shape. He just, for some reason, cannot field anymore. And he used to be a really good defensive player, which is one of those things that's very difficult to convince anyone of, especially now.
Despite
but
not
he was
having
a legitimate
a lot of
gold
leather. Wait, he handled the he had good leather.
Yeah, he was agile and he had the instincts for it, and he could hit. And moving to Fenway Park made so much sense. But you know, he had a down year, and then he got hurt, and he just hasn't been the same since the injury. And, like, these things happen. And it's a risk. It's a risk teams have to take. If you're going to go into free agency, which every team except for the Rays basically do, the deep end of free agency, you're gonna have moves like this sometimes that just don't work out. And the Red Sox are honestly in a good position because while Sandoval didn't work out for them, they made the playoffs last year without him. They're in first place in the AL East this year without him or honestly anyone at the Rays. So they're in a spot where there's no real lesson to learn. It didn't work. Other things have worked out for them. You know, giving up all those prospects for Chris Sale has worked out so far. Giving all that money to David Price has been working out so far. Sometimes it doesn't.
Mark, you in the same article that you write about Sandoval, you talk about some of the other awful contracts, and you mention a few Tigers. So I'm going to throw, you know, we already talked about the possibility of Verlander being traded, and also Miguel Cabrera, and also Jordan Zimmermann, and here they are, the Tigers. Verlander is owed $70 million more through 2019, as we talked about. Miguel Cabrera is having the worst season since his rookie season, as you point out. He's owed just shy of $200 million more on this deal through age 40 in 2023. And this year does not bode well if this is the beginning of a decline like that. And Zimmermann in the second year of a $110 million contract. So I mean, they've got three of the worst contracts, at least based on current performance. Now, I don't want to throw stones at these guys totally because Cabrera, of course, was amazing in the last couple of years. Verlander, he had won the Triple Crown and MVP a few years back. Verlander last year might have been the Cy Young winner. Maybe should have been the Cy Young winner. But for now, based on how all three of those guys look right now and the amount of money left on their deals, yeah, that's something tough to swallow if you're the Tigers front office.
Yeah, the thing with, at least with Cabrera, he was so great a year ago, and I feel like there are two paths for him to take. He could become the next Albert Pujols, where he's clearly overpaid, but he's still contributing.
Right.
And if you have the financial ability to work around him being overpaid, you know, you can do something with that. As long as your farm system is never completely bereft of anything like the Angels was, and the Tigers seem like they're historically in a better place than the Angels have been. The other path is that Miguel Cabrera rebounds, a la David Ortiz, and is worth that money pretty much from here until the end of the contract. That's quite the range. There's, you know, it's not like Miguel Cabrera is having a bad season. He's just not having the kind of season you would expect for someone making this kind of money. If he had this season and was a free agent, no one's going to sign him to a $200 million contract this winter, you know. So it's not hopeless yet, but they're probably not going to be able to move him at the deadline or anything like that if they were thinking about that.
Yeah, and that seems fair enough, Mark. Just one more quick one to talk about the teams that we follow here. The Indians underperforming, I think really most people would agree. This is a division they should not be this close with right now, the second and third place teams, just a game and a half and two games up on Minnesota and Kansas City, respectively. Not sure exactly where the problem lies, if there's one position specifically that needs to be upgraded. Maybe it's a couple. I wouldn't have thought they'd be buyers at all just because they kind of had the same roster that took them to the seventh game, the 10th inning of the seventh game of the World Series last year and made it better with the addition of Encarnacion. And maybe taking on his money makes it impossible to do anything else. But now that they're kind of scuffling just to win the division, you know, and of course they got to compete with the Red Sox and the Astros and everything else, do you think they do something in the next 2 weeks? And if so, how big a move?
Probably nothing huge. Maybe some things at the margins to help tighten things up. They're still the best team in that division. The Twins are good, and the Twins are ahead of schedule. And it's possible that the Twins end up being one of those teams with a lot of good young players that just kind of runs out of steam before the year's over. The Yankees are kind of doing that right now. Not that the Yankee season is anywhere close to over, but you can start to see where some of the cracks are showing and where they could be worse by the time September's really rolling around. So Indians should do something, nothing huge. I think they're just mostly suffering from less severe versions of what the Cubs and the Mets are going through, which is they came in with a pretty similar roster to the year before, and sometimes all those players, they just don't play the same way.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And I was going to ask you about the Cubs since you brought it. A lot of people just said it's a World Series hangover. Do you believe in that sort of thing where the high of last year, they just don't play with the same energy? That's not to say they're not playing hard. But the spirit, the adrenaline, the whatever you want to call it, just isn't there, even though it's the same guys, because both of these two World Series teams are kind of scuffling. I mean, the Indians are still, as you said, the best team in the division, and they'll probably still win it, but that doesn't mean they'll have the same playoff success based on the competition. Cubs may not win their division because of what Milwaukee is doing and may continue to do. So to what do you attribute that? I mean, do you just kind of call it that hangover effect that where guys are just, you know, they just don't have it, like, you know, have the it, if you want to call it that, kind of like a pitcher sometimes doesn't have his stuff that's indefinable?
It's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think baseball is just really hard. Baseball is so difficult, and you know, you get in these situations where maybe you don't in the moment notice that, you know, you're just too focused on the fact that, like, the Cubs have such a great pitching staff from top to bottom, and you don't really pay attention to the fact that, like, the Cubs really only use Kyle Hendricks for five innings at a time because teams crush him the third time through the order. And Jake Arrieta really is putting on some mileage we've never seen him put on before. I wonder how long that will hold up. And, hey, John Lester actually has a lot of innings on him at this point in his career. Maybe he won't be this guy forever. And John Lackey's 39 years old. And pitchers don't tend to succeed at the level that he's been succeeding at for this long. So you have all these good things happen, and you kind of ignore in the moment, you know, as an analyst, as a fan, hey, things could go to hell real soon. And that's kind of what's happened. That's why they had to trade for Jose Quintana. They emptied out the last of their top 100 prospects to do it. Probably not a huge problem because they've got so many young guys in the lineup already, so it's not like there's a problem with not having an injection of youth down the line. But, you know, they're just dealing with the problems that come with having a pitching staff. It's like the Cubs are, like the Indians are a less severe version of what's happening to the Cubs. The Cubs are a less severe version of what's happening to the Mets, where they've just, everything has gone worse even more so.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, I don't think it's a cop-out answer. You're right. I mean, baseball is a hard game, and it's hard to master it the same way for all of the guys to master it one year to the next with the expectations being the same. And sometimes that is all the difference. Mark Normandin, MLB editor for SBNation.com, laying down the knowledge for us. Now, Mark, thanks very much. We appreciate your analysis. We'd love to talk to you again as we get closer to that deadline, okay?
Of course, anytime.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Mark Normandin joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
And thanks so much for Mark for joining us. All those trade topics, of course, will still very, very, very much be part of the discussion as we keep going forward. Hey, I got something special for you as we head out the door for a quick timeout. Doug Krieger, football instructor for officiating instructor. That's coming up next. Little public service announcement. Dire need of officials. But I got something fun for you guys as we head out the door. You know, you want to cool off, get in the water, but also don't want to get sunburned. Here's the best for you. So we have a sweet deal right now. 4-pack of tickets to Splash Universe up there in Dundee. Log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow at 9 a.m. Get a $130 gift certificate for just $35. But if you want it for $0, I got one of those for you right now. Be caller number 5 to 866-240-1065. We'll hook you up with a 4-pack of tickets to Splash Universe in Dundee. Doug Krieger, football officiating instructor, joins us next here on the Extravaganza
on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Our final segment here of this Tuesday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushman, Chris Mitchell hanging out with you. Bob France will be back in the big chair coming up tomorrow, and then that big chair for Bob and the Extravaganza will shift on Thursday to Highland Meadows for part of our Marathon Classic coverage this week. Mike Miller, by the way, on Drive Time coming up next. He's already out there. He was there yesterday. He's on location at Highland Meadows today and throughout the rest of the week. Want to take a little detour from what we've been talking about today, and thanks for some of your phone calls on all of that. We're getting close, obviously, as we know. We're a little over a month away at this point from high school football starting up in the fall. We're going to have all the Bill Clark Central Catholic broadcasts here on The Ticket once again, Perrysburg games over on Talk Radio 100.7, scoreboard shows, coaches shows, all that stuff. But sometimes what goes unnoticed, or at least unnoticed until you're out there yelling at them, of course, while in the stands, is the officials. And I've been bringing this subject up, as you guys know, ever since I became first a basketball official and then a baseball umpire, that, you know, there's the biggest thing that I've noticed is need of people. They're very much in need of people, not just for football to become an official for at the State of Ohio for high school games, but pretty much every other sport as well. Ran into this gentleman over the weekend. He does some umpiring. I was his partner. No names, please. We do not divulge where we were. He's also done a lot with basketball side of things. He was actually my instructor for my basketball officiating class. And starting next month in Bowling Green, If you want to learn and become a football official, this will be the man that will give you your instructions. He's Doug Krieger. Take some time to talk to us about the upcoming season, for especially from that officiating point of view. Doug, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you today?
Just doing fine, Jim. Thanks for the introduction, and that was very gracious. Thank you.
No, thank you for joining us, because when we were talking the other day, you and I, and I discussed this, I figured, you know, I like to do these every now and again, and I look at them less as interview-type segments and more of an extended public service announcement, because that's what I kind of feel it is. You know, I personally never knew a lot of this stuff about, you know, how badly in need all sports, not just football, for example, are. And that's kind of where I want to start, and why I brought you on, because you're the instructor for anybody here in Northwest Ohio. I've even looked up. As far as I know, there's no class in Lucas County. So if you're wanting to become a football official, then you'll be going to Bowling Green and being taught by this man, Doug Krieger, and he knows his stuff. And the biggest theme, once again, as you and I were talking over the weekend, Doug, people. Very, very much in need of people. And, in fact, the number you told me for Wood County is just bordering on, wow, that's almost crisis. That's a low, low number. Even though none of these people who take the class coming up, for example, would be varsity eligible this season, that's still a number. The number you were telling me is 25 left in all of Wood County who are varsity eligible football officials. That really sums up the need that I've been preaching whenever this subject comes up here on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, the need isn't just around here in Northwest Ohio, though. It's critical. And even when we get out in the association, the Defiance Area Association, towards the Indiana border, mm-hmm. They're in real crisis need as well. But what we've seen all over the state of Ohio, here at from one end of the state to the other, is essentially that our officiating crews are basically all aging. We have a little standard that says basically the kids are always the same age and we're always 1 year older. But it's never been really truer of our officiating cadre. So we are basically looking for men and women who are 18 years or older who are interested in becoming officials. And that's really for any sport. Football, I'm talking about football because football is near and dear to my heart, and I do the instruction for that. But if you're inclined for another sport or very interested in other sports, I know all of the sports are in need of additional officials to come on board, especially the fall sports. So when we think about soccer and also think about volleyball and, mm-hmm. and those sort of things, they're in critical need for new officials to come on board as well for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, because we're approaching the fall season, and that's why this feels, especially on the football level, but you're absolutely correct on all the sports, very pertinent right now to get some of this information out. So let's move that to the next step. If anybody who's listening to us right now, they've often thought, oh, that might be something fun to do. I know I can make a few extra bucks, you know, doing something like that. Bowling Green is going to be really the only place here in Northwest Ohio under your tutelage to get certified as a football official. Walk our listeners through the process, what they have to do, how much it's going to cost them for fees, and how soon they can then expect to get some work on the field. With the notation, of course, if you're going into the class right now, you won't be varsity eligible, so you won't have to deal with Friday nights, but there's still JV, there's still freshmen, and there's still all sorts of youth leagues all around the area that'll be all playing here, obviously, in the fall. So walk our listeners through, if they're interested, what they have to do.
Well, yeah, and any folks who are interested in actually, I mean, our class in Bowling Green will be going on, but it is possible that there may be some other classes that would crop up around Northwest Ohio. We're just in the process. Most of the guys, the instructors, run classes that are. They kind of follow along the same sports season that they're in. And so, it's possible that, if you're closer to like Fremont or if you're closer to Findlay, if you pop that into the search agent that I'll kind of explain to you on how to get in, you may be able to find one that's closer to you. And that could, as we move a little bit closer to the fall, some of those could pop up. But certainly our class is already available and already up, and we are definitely able to take folks that are interested in and would be anxious to have folks. So essentially what people can expect is that we would start our instruction on August 15th, which is about 3 weeks before the high school season officially starts. So scrimmages and other things are underway. And as part of our instruction, we have to, as far as becoming an official has to accomplish three specific things. Mm-hmm. They have to become proficient in rules, and they have to become proficient in a thing called mechanics. And mechanics is basically where you are on the field, how you cover plays, how you cover positions. And I know that might not make sense for everybody, but officials, especially in football, we have specific positions that we fill on the field that tells us where we need to cover, what parts of the field we have to pay attention to, which players we're keeping track of, and that sort of thing. And so you have to learn all those things in order to basically provide the amount of coverage that's needed in order to make sure that the game is adequately covered. And then the last thing is concussion protocols, which is basically concussion safety. So one of the big issues that we've had in all of the sports is an awareness that head injuries happen for kids, and that the sooner that they get attention and get sort of rest and medical attention, then the less risk it is for that player for having long-lasting effects of concussions, the quicker they can get back in the sports and not have ongoing issues with it. So we have to become proficient in all three of those things.
Okay.
So we spend time in each one of our sessions helping new officials learn those specific items. And then as part of our class, we have time where we'll be spending on the field. So we gradually introduce the officials to their experiences on the field. And it will ultimately culminate as we get closer and closer to completion of the course, of having some experiences with youth football games initially, to sort of get an understanding about how live action is going and basically how to cover the field and how to work with your crew, when to throw, you know, flags and that sort of thing. And then ultimately culminating in helping folks as the season gets into October and things, of helping us cover underclass games, junior high, 7th, 8th grade games, 9th grade games, and those sort of things.
Doug Krieger, football instructor, joining us. And before I let you go, because the music's playing, so that means I'm out of time on my end, Doug, where do people go to register? I know there's costs, obviously, to it. Might scare people away. But at the same time, I can always promise, I learned this from my own sports, you'll make that money back in your quote-unquote rookie season. But if people are interested, where do they have to go to register?
If they will go to www.ohsaa.org and then find the tab on becoming an official, and all they have to do is then click the sport that they're interested, click football, and it'll take them right to register, and then they can find an instructor that's nearby then. And our course just costs $75, which is basically what it costs for materials and testing. So again, I don't want people to feel too concerned about the cost. It is one of those things where it makes the money gets made back fairly quickly.
Doug Krieger, football instructor, taking a few minutes to let everybody know where to go if they're interested in becoming a football official. Plenty of space open in the Bowling Green class that he will be teaching. And the main theme, guys, they need people, even if you won't be varsity eligible this fall, that you're going to be needed eventually. Doug, thanks so much for taking the time. Maybe I'll catch up with you on this type of topic down the line again.
Sounds great, Jim. Take care.
Doug Krieger again, a football instructor, joining us. And that's all the time we have. You hear the music playing. So we got to get out, make way for Mike Miller Drive Time live from Highland Meadows for the Marathon Classic Week. So that's coming up next. Stick around for that. Extra innings with Bill Clark. All your baseball recap later today at 10 o'clock tonight. And we'll do it all again tomorrow. See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field.
Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.